Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast Extras. In this episode, we take a look back on our last 2 weeks of gaming and overclocking adventures. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia. With me today, I have Darren McKay. Darren, once again, our podcast extra for March 2019 is delayed.
Yeah, no surprise there. The spring ones are always a challenge, but this was a particularly busy stretch because...
Well, two events, really. There was the Boise LAN 9.0 and then Hackfort, which is a local tech... What is it? Tech show or something like that in Boise?
Yeah, I think they like the term tech symposium, which is always an interesting word.
Symposium. Ooh, I like that word.
Yeah, but definitely a very busy time because we had very active involvement in both of those events.
Yeah, definitely. So with the Boise LAN, that's an event that we have both sponsored for the past, the past 8 LAN parties.
Oh my gosh, how did we miss the first one? I thought we did catch all of them.
Well, no, the first one was, that's the one that I found in CPU Mag in the very end. Yeah. And they had it in Nampa, so it was really the Nampa LAN party.
Don't tell.
Oh, so anyhow, at the Boise LAN, it was a big event because I was giving away prizes, as I normally do.
Right.
And I was also building a new machine for myself that was using some of the hardware that we reviewed in, February, to put a whole build together. And I was going to be doing some LN2 overclocking.
Now, one of the interesting things about that build also worth mentioning is this included some of the hardware that we previewed from CES.
Correct. Yeah. So we had the RS WaterForce Extreme, the Z390 with the full coverage water block.
So sexy.
We were using some Ballistics Tracer, Tactical Tracer RGB memory.
Also sexy.
And an RGB HyperX SSD.
Ooh, I'm sensing a theme here.
Yeah, and the Silverstone, what is it, the LSB02, I think is the name of it. It's basically their addressable RGB controller with a fan controller remote start.
Gotta love that.
Yeah, and it, my build probably got the most pictures out of any build there because every time somebody would come by, it was, had a different light show. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah, and I thought that it was kind of an understated build initially because you were just using off-the-shelf stuff. You did do water cooling, though.
I did do water cooling.
Which you didn't really talk about, but this was not the dramatic water cooling builds that we've done in the past. This was more of what we'd expect from a hobbyist.
Yeah, exactly. It was all the hardware was stuff that we had reviewed at Hardware Asylum.
So, of course, we have posted already some articles and some Facebook pictures, but just for fun, let's high level through the build. So we already talked about some of it, but I want to talk about the case because I thought the case was a big piece of the build and an inspiration for some of the look.
Yeah, so I had the Cooler Master Master Case Maker 5T. Mouthful, but it was
a mouthful.
It's basically the super top of the line of their Maker series of the Master Case 5, and it had a red and black theme with tempered glass side panels, shaded, by the way, so it actually was what I would have normally done. Amazingly, I had to pull out a lot of the stuff that they, Cooler Master, had added, all the accessories, to get the water cooling build and everything else to fit in.
Gotta make room.
It was pretty crazy. And then, let's see, we had the case, and then I used a Silverstone 1500-watt titanium power supply just because... And then we already mentioned the motherboard. We mentioned, the video card.
Oh, yeah, the video card. Now, this is an interesting choice. Yeah. Not.
It was the EVGA 1080 classified.
Now, hold on. We went with some pretty cutting-edge stuff. Why not an RTX card?
I don't have one.
Well, and you wanted to go with a Kingpin Edition, if I'm not mistaken.
I did. But the Kingpin Edition card was a bit heavy, and the case was already extremely heavy. And I just figured I might as well save it a little bit of weight. And the 1080 was a very proven card. I've taken it to the LAN party before, had RGB lights, whereas the Kingpin card did not necessarily have the same amount of lighting. So, yeah, that was the one I grabbed to put in there.
Now, I know you talked about the heavy, but that case had a handle, if I'm not mistaken, that master case.
It does have a handle. I know that the handle could support the weight because I was holding it from there, but I kind of felt a little... I was scared, really. I mean, it has 3 screws, basically, that hold this handle to the case. And I know it's strong, but yeah, it's just when you see that it's got 3 screws, you kind of take it easy.
Very strong. Now, I think the only thing really that's left to talk about is the water cooling components, because you built the water cooling. I did mention that this was more of a hobbyist water cooling build. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean that we didn't do hard tubing.
Nope.
And everything was pretty much just the way that you'd buy it, with obvious exception of course, cutting the tubes.
Right. So I did the XSPC compression fittings. They were the 7/16 inside diameter, so a little bit smaller than what I would normally use, but they looked great. So I had those compression fittings to connect the water force water block. That was the only thing that was really water cooled, was the entire motherboard. That was hooked into just a generic 240 rad that I had, and also an XSPC Froton pump res combo.
Now, I think I heard you quote at least once for the LAN party that you were pretty happy with the water cooling build because you thought that it was strong enough that you could have maybe picked it up by those water cooling tubes and carried that heavy thing.
Yeah. So I was, and I wasn't really lying. So the way that the compression fittings work with the XSPC, at least, is that there is a barb, an actual barb in there that you put the hose over, you know, like a typical barb, you have to push it on there to get it. And then the compression fitting press down on the barb, the top of the barb, so it basically sandwiched the tube in between the two. And it was super, super strong. I mean, at that point, I really could have carried the whole case because it's not going to come loose. Unlike with the hardline fittings, like what we put into your build, you can actually pull those apart because the only thing that's really holding them there is the compression of the O-ring and however much pressure you can put onto it.
Very cool. Well, let's wind it up by stating the processor, which I, if I'm not mistaken, was the Intel 9900K.
No, I did an 8700K in this particular machine. Oh. You are thinking of the LN2 rig.
I am. And that's not a big surprise because the LN2 machine was kind of a hodgepodge also.
With the Boise LAN party, I do a demo of some sort. So the very first one, which was the Boise LAN 2.0, we did a podcast scavenger hunt.
Woohoo. Now, this was our first opportunity to get in front of these folks for the most part, so we really wanted to give them a chance to get to know us and also give us a more interactive way to give stuff away as opposed to the traditional giveaway style.
Yeah, and that was also where we had nacho cheese.
Nacho cheese, which of course is the most exotic of the cooling liquids.
Yeah, that was episode 60, by the way. I'll link it down in the show notes. The next LAN party, I decided to do an overclocking demonstration using dry ice.
I thought this one was really successful because most folks, I don't think, were aware that you could do dry ice overclocking. I mean, at least the hardcore folks are familiar with liquid nitrogen because that gets a lot of press, mm-hmm. and maybe phase, but the dry ice thing I thought was very effective.
It was, and people still come up and ask me about the dry ice, which I was amazed because it wasn't terribly successful in terms of what I was able to attain overclocking-wise, but it gave you a lot to see because you would see the rubbing alcohol just kind of boiling really, really slow as the dry ice was just off-gassing. It's pretty cool.
That one I think we may have to bring back around again because apparently people are too jaded for liquid nitrogen these days.
It seems that way. Let's see. The next one, we did a sleeper build. That's where I put an X99 in an HP case with a full water cooler and everything. It was pretty fun.
Yeah, I think for me, that was one of the most fun builds for me, taking that old HP machine and gutting it and bringing it down and having people freak out that it was such an extreme build.
Yeah, it was amazing. We also did a couple of YouTube videos of that build, so I might be able to link those in the show notes as well. Let's see, the next one, I did a three-way video card. It was GTX 780 classifieds. They were all water cooled.
Yes.
And I had that hooked up to my single stage phase. I thought, hey, I'm going to amp it up, bring in my phase machine. But this was the LAN where I kept bringing down the power.
Yeah. And see, now I would have told you this was the least successful because every time we fired up that massive phase unit, we killed half the LAN party's power.
Yeah. But the one time that they did shut down in between a tournament, I was able to explain how the three-way video card overclocking SLI monster worked. And when the phase was working, the processor was overclocked pretty well.
Yeah, I still think we should give that one another shot too, just to be different. But definitely, yeah, we'll have to see if we can get a better power grid together.
Yeah, well, and that particular build was really heavy in terms of what I had to bring. So there was a lot of logistics involved, so it was more difficult.
Absolutely.
Next one, we did a Z97 on LN2, at 6 gigahertz. That was actually really successful. We got a lot of people coming over with all the smoke and stuff. Let's see, followed that up with an X299 with a Core i7-7740X that I delitted, running that at 6 gigahertz.
Nice.
And then this last one was the Z390 with the 9900K on LN2 at 6.2 gigahertz.
Yeah, now I feel like this one was super successful also, but from a LAN party standpoint, this was just kind of a warm-up for the big show.
Yeah.
We really wanted the excuse to put the machine together, get a little bit of time on it with the liquid nitrogen in a casual environment because we knew we were going to need that machine for the Hackfort presentation.
Yeah, and that was the following week. So at the Boise LAN, I basically just put it through its paces, figured out where the cold wug was, what the maximum clock was, and what was actually 3D stable. So I was running 3D benchmarks that entire time on a 1050 Ti from Gigabyte.
Now, that's a really interesting decision, and a lot of people, I think, were thrown back by this because, I mean, 9900K, Ballistics Elite memory, and then what, a 1050 Ti?
1050 Ti.
And that was the Gigabyte G1, so a good 1050 at least.
The intent at the Boise LAN was I just wanted to test the processor. And I was going to run 2D benchmarks. You can run like 3D Mark 06 off of that. It's mostly a 2D benchmark, but it does have some 3D components that allow it to run more efficiently.
So if I'm not mistaken, you didn't overclock anything but the processor at Boise LAN.
Correct.
And how did you do?
That's right. I almost forgot. I had second place in the 3D Mark 06 for that particular hardware configuration.
Yeah.
Now, like within 500 points.
Pretty good. So let's get a little perspective on this. So the record, if I remember correctly, was just over 6,600 points. And these points are what kind of points?
Oh, these are 3D Mark points. It was at 55 and some change. That was the current record. And I was at 54.7 or something like that.
So close.
So close. And I basically tried for the next hour trying to unsuccessfully get a little bit more efficiency into it. I mean, we swapped memory out of my LAN machine and plopped that in there to see if that would actually help, and it didn't.
So did you feel like you had a bad processor hardware combination? What was the limiting factor here?
Well, I thought the processor was a little junky. However, when I was looking at what the current record holder was using, it was a different processor configuration, and he was running a slightly slower clock. So I'm pretty sure that with a little bit of tweaking, I could have actually made it. That's why I kept going.
That doesn't make sense to me. Now, he had a slower setup, but he was running faster, more points. How does that work?
Well, his video card was overclocked a little bit more than mine was. And there's efficiencies in a benchmark. So when you're running, if you can run it in a certain configuration or a certain memory clock speed, there's tweaks that you make with the hardware to make the benchmark run faster. And in some cases, you can change like the level of detail so that the textures get rendered quicker. You can tweak some of the other driver settings as well. I just didn't go out of the box. That was the way I was running it.
Well, getting second place is pretty good. But again, you mentioned that you thought you had a bad processor. So how does that work out? What's a bad processor? What does that mean?
A bad processor is that I was expecting it to run faster at the temperatures and voltages that I had set. And that was based off of what I was seeing on HardwareBot for other people running that particular processor.
So if I want to go out and buy a better processor, how do I accomplish this? Because I kind of want to get a dog. I mean, I can't afford multiple processors.
Well, that's kind of what you have to do, really. You have to go and pick up, say, 5 of them and run them through a predetermined overclocking test and see which one runs the most efficient.
The whole
binning process, remember?
Wait a minute. All right. So that's a lot of money.
Yeah, that's a fair amount of cash. At the Boise LAN, you know, we did the overclocking demonstration. Then we went to dinner and came back. And then I think we played Far Cry for the rest of the night or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we did. And which was fun, too, because that was a new game for both of us.
Then, what was it? The next week, I set out to say, I want to break this record.
And well, we knew we were going to be in a very public venue with more folks, so we wanted to give them something to get excited about.
Yep. So what I did was I broke out the video card evaporator and attached it to the 1050 Ti just for the more megahertz.
So what's an evaporator? That's kind of an exciting title.
Yeah, it's just an Ellen II pot.
For your video card?
For your video card. It's really thin. And I have pictures of it on the website. So I'll link the article where all this stuff is in the show notes. You can go and check it out.
Very pretty. Okay, so that was the only change to the setup between the two.
Mm-hmm. And that got me an extra 150 megahertz. It was 1911 was the highest that that video card would run on air. And when I put the evaporator on there, I was able to get 2060.
Wow. Now, I think I remember one of the really common questions from the LAN party was, how cold does this get for the video card and the processor? And I know that that is a really important thing to talk about when you're talking about overclocking. So how did that work out?
Well, that was part of the testing of the processor was to find out what temperature it needed to be at to run at a certain frequency at that certain voltage. And that's that little triangle of the three things you have to manage, which is voltage, temperature, and frequency.
Okay.
And they all kind of move up this chart. And at some point, then they go in a logarithmic scale, and that's the extent of the processor. So at some point, it doesn't matter how much voltage you give it, how cold you get it, it just won't go any faster.
So there is a diminishing returns point, or at least it just stops functioning.
So what I found was that I could run that 9900K at about negative 75 C at 6.2 gigahertz, and it would be 3D stable.
What about the video card?
The video card, it kind of liked to be run at negative 60, but I had it all the way down to 120 testing here in the lab, and I have a picture of it on Facebook where it's all covered in frost, and it kind of didn't like that.
No, the diminishing returns happen.
Yep.
Now, what about the rest of the board? Did we water cool the board itself or the memory or anything else extreme?
Nope. And just kind of keep it as is. Insulated, obviously, to make sure that no condensation gets into anything that's important, and make sure that you have some paper towels to absorb whatever condensation you're going to get, because it's eventually that frost has to turn into water. And that water has to go somewhere. You want it to go where you want it to go.
Well, in addition to doing the liquid nitrogen demonstration that we did out on the floor at Hackfort, we also did a little less than an hour long, just discussion about enthusiast PCs and overclocking in general. Mm-hmm. And I know that the temperature question wasn't the only question, so maybe we could talk about some of the hot questions for the folks that couldn't attend that first session.
Yeah, so the panel, as we call it, I don't think it was actually as successful as what we did on the show floor, but we had a lot of really interesting questions, and I'm not sure if we answered them in the most correct way.
Yeah, well, and to be fair, one of the biggest challenges of doing a panel-typed Q&A is that you don't know what the education level and experience level is in the audience, but you do know that it's varied. Yeah. So trying to find the right response is, I think, a little more challenging than we expected initially, because our response is usually either to be dumb or to be super technical, and there's not much middle ground.
Yeah, and we had some glassy eyes a couple times.
Sure, so, we did.
So anyhow, I wrote down some of the questions that I remembered that I thought we could revisit.
And okay.
One of them was collectible hardware.
Woohoo!
So we had a gentleman ask us about computer hardware and if there was any sort of a collectibility of it or
he
anything.
He must know you.
Yeah, he must.
He's stalking you.
Something like that. So let's see. I'd mentioned that. There I was talking about Halo and Unicorn hardware, and these are the things we talk about on the podcast where we have a very limited run or something that's designed for one specific purpose only. And that's the kind of stuff that I like to see.
What kind of Unicorn hardware did we have there?
We had, well, in my build, I had the 1080 classified from EVGA. That's a bit of a Unicorn.
Right.
Mostly because it's the super high-end that was available, and there isn't a lot of them that they made.
Well, that makes sense, because if you're going to buy a classified, you probably bought a processor that was a little higher up than that particular unit. Mm-hmm.
And then we also had the RS-Z390 Waterforce Extreme.
Oh, still so sexy.
So sexy. It was, it made the Halo Unicorn list because there isn't a lot of them, and they were really, really, really expensive.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And definitely worth going out and taking a look at the pictures on that thing. And if you have the means, as they say in Ferris Bueller, I highly recommend that you pick one up for yourself.
Yeah. And out of everything else that we had, nothing strikes me as being a Halo product aside from, like, you know, the LN2 hardware, but not everybody has that stuff, but not everybody needs it.
Well, and it's fair, I think, to call that unicorn hardware because the market for that is small. It's very difficult to get, and you kind of have to know people to get the good stuff because it's not always for sale on the open market.
Right. And the one point that I wanted to bring up about collectible hardware is that aside from the fact that it's rare or it's expensive, it has a definite life, as with any computer component. So you could run like a GTX 580 classified, which is now one of the pinnacles of what could have happened with overclocking video cards had NVIDIA not stepped in. The thing is, though, it's a 580, and eventually the games are going to go beyond what that hardware supports, so you're not going to be able to use it for anything aside from saying, I have a GTX 580 classified.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not going to frame it and put it on the wall, I mean, you got to have some good reason to own extra hardware.
Mm-hmm. And some hardware actually does wear out. Like, famously, 10, 15 years ago, motherboards were failing because the capacitors were exploding because they were using, cheap China capacitors.
Lowest common bidder, sadly.
Yep. And now they sell them as being the Japanese capacitor. Basically, it's just the one that has the cap over the top of it. They'll still explode after a while, but they are less likely to fail versus some of the cheaper stuff.
That's interesting because one of the follow-up questions for that that's really common is, you know, how long is the lifetime? How much should I spend? Which is kind of almost the same question, right? Because mm-hmm. we talk about future-proofing. And I think most people, we recommend that you're probably going to replace your PC within about 5 years if you have the desire to be competitive or to have the compatibility with the latest software and games.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, this next question is a good one.
Yeah, so there...
Oh, no.
This is the one where there was physically some groans in the room, and I'm thinking that I just kind of offended everybody. But it was, what's better, AMD or Intel, or AMD or NVIDIA?
This is so funny, because there are still fanboys out there, and sometimes we've been accused of being fanboys, which... okay, sometimes.
Yeah. So this question, I addressed it as, well, it's the common, you know, Pepsi versus Coke, Porsche versus Ferrari, you know, everything has a purpose. And for extreme overclocking, AMD hardware is typically not done very well. And that was something that I didn't make very clear in the panel.
What did you say?
I pretty much said I didn't like it. AMD were money grubbers in how they... When they release a product, it's released at the very end, at the extreme of what performance it can provide. It's
no usually because overclocks, no overhead.
No overhead. A lot of heat. And a lot of times, what was it? There was a video card from AMD that was basically the same core they released 5 years ago. And they just keep upping the, they overclock it, and then they re-release it as a new product.
Good old AM2, AM3 architecture has been around for a long time.
It has. The reason I wanted to bring this one up was because while I said that Intel was what I chose, and that's what was in all the machines that we were showing, I suspect that a lot of people that were in that room were either using really low-end Intel hardware or AMD Ryzen, mostly because it was available and less expensive.
Yeah, and the same with the video cards. True. A lot of middle range, I would say, AMD video cards are very popular for gaming for that same reason. People see the price to performance ratio. They don't particularly need to be at the cutting edge. And if you're not educated, you don't know about the extra heat and power requirements and the effects they have on your system.
Exactly. The next question was about the overclocking triangle, and that was balancing the voltage, temperature, and frequency. We'd already talked about that. But the reason I brought this one up is because there was a gentleman that asked the question about overclocking his Core i3.
Yes.
And while I think that I did address the question, the part that I didn't bring up was the fact that i3s and i5s that aren't the K edition are not necessarily overclockable.
Oh, yeah. And you're right. We didn't, because we didn't really talk about the differences between the ones that are out there and some of the sometimes misleading labels like Black Edition, for example, gets thrown around a lot.
Yeah, a lot. So with the Core i3, you have a boost clock that's built into the processor, and that will go and the BIOS will change the multiplier when it detects that there needs to be more power coming out of the CPU.
Ooh, turbo button.
Basically turbo button. And the idea behind that is that when it goes into low power mode, it's not using a lot of power. hence the low power mode. You can overclock those processors if you increase the front side bus, and a lot of times you are increasing how fast the interaction to the video card is, how fast the interaction to the storage controller is, and a lot of times that can cause failures and instabilities.
Oh, no good.
So what I should have said was that, sure, you can overclock your Core i3, but it is dangerous and it's not really designed for that. You should get a K edition and get a little bit more frequency because those are always clocked higher than the non-K editions. And you get the ability to change the multiplier beyond what the turbo is set at.
Very good. Very good. And the fact of the matter is that most folks these days, if you buy a good setup that's current, it's probably going to be good enough.
Yeah. Let's see. We got a question about a small computer case that supports a full-length graphics card. And I believe this was in relation to someone traveling with a VR system.
That is true. Now, this particular gal wanted a system that she could take with her on the road. So what is the smallest PC-PC case combination that would fit a full-size card? Because, of course, the primary driver for VR is a good, powerful graphics card. So you can't skimp with a little half-height or an older generation card.
No. So I would suggest probably looking at Silverstone. Silverstone has a couple, actually there's like five of them now. They are mini ITX enabled cases that have a riser card, so you can put a full length video card in there, and it's really thin. So the box itself is about a foot by a foot and 6 or 8 inches wide or something like that. And it fits all of that hardware in there. The problem is cooling. So if you get a full-length video card in there plus a beefy processor to run all that stuff, you got to get the heat out of the case.
Yeah, and you know, I was just reminded that we did see quite a few external video card solutions while we're at CES. So yep. You could have purchased one of these external video card boxes and then, you know,
hook it into a laptop.
Run it off your laptop, which makes it pretty portable also. And then when you don't need it, you can just pack that away.
Yeah. The other suggestion was the VR Go from Zotac, which was basically
the backpack.
It was it's a PC in a backpack. And it, I believe, was running a full length video card, something that could run VR. It was wireless, so it had a battery in there. But it was also running mobile hardware, which is why it could run off of battery for, I think it was like an hour or something like that.
Yeah, it was pretty slick. She had a multi-battery setup where you could just pop one out, pop one in, which I thought was really cool. Now, maybe not the future, but definitely a unique perspective on how to get you mobile in your VR setup.
Yep. Some of the other solutions would be any mini ITX case from Fantex. If you go with the Evolve, it's a cube. And being cubic in nature means that you can put a full-size power supply in there. You can put a full-size video card in there and a decent cooler, meaning an AIO water cooler or something big and quiet from Noctua or whatever.
Well, the plus side there is a lot of competition in that realm. They're very common, although not as small.
Yes. One of the other questions I got on the show floor when I was overclocking and not really paying attention was differences between the EVGA 1080 classified and the 1080 Ti. And I'm assuming that she meant the 1080 Ti classified.
Yeah, you'd think apples to apples, or sort of apples to apples.
Yeah, so there's a couple of differences. Between the classifieds themselves, the only difference is the chip. And that's basically it. You know, you have different architecture for the 1080 Ti versus the 1080, so it has different memory configuration, different power requirements, obviously. But in terms of performance, it's just the chip. If you're going from the 1080 classified to the 1080 Founders Edition, it's more like apples to oranges in terms of the difference. The only thing that links them together is the fact that it is an NVIDIA 1080 chip. After that, the board and the way that it runs is completely different.
Perfect. Now, I had a lot of questions because all of the machines that we brought were water-cooled. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the extreme overclocking machine was liquid nitrogen-cooled. But there were a lot of questions about how safe is water cooling because you're mixing water with your hardware. And how much did that bother us?
Yeah, so it doesn't bother me at all. And I see on three separate occasions by three different people, they came up and asked about that water cooling question. That was like the biggest question that we ever got.
Scary stuff, water cooling.
Super scary. And, you know, there was three people that said, oh, well, I know a friend.
Not always.
That had a water cooling loop and it had a catastrophic failure.
We had a catastrophic failure once.
We did. I mean, it's not uncommon. Catastrophic failures are, they sound bad, but in a lot of cases, it's not as bad as you would imagine it to be.
Well, it's a risk reward system for sure. And to be fair, we had a catastrophic failure in my PC at a LAN party.
At a LAN party.
And we had, we'd done something a little different that was risky and it didn't work out. And without going into too much detail, because you can go back to that podcast if you like and read about it.
Actually, we didn't talk about that.
Oh, on the pod. Well, then we should talk about it. It failed. How did it fail?
The hose fell off.
The hose, yeah. That sounds pretty catastrophic. And in fact, it was under relatively high pressure, so it didn't just fall off. It sprayed beautiful bright red cooling liquid several feet.
Yeah, and I was still getting some of that coolant off of my Evolve, because I was right across from you when I set up a land rig like three lands later.
Ah, that crap stains too. Jeez.
Yeah. So anyhow, what the root cause of it was the fact that, one, we put the loop together, but I didn't tighten down all the fittings correctly all the way through.
That sounds like some sort of, newbie thing. Yeah.
Yeah. It was more like we put it together.
Is that like
cut
once, measure twice kind of wisdom there?
Well, we just didn't go through and retighten all of them.
Well, we moved it really quickly after we built it, which also put a lot of strain on the system.
Yep. And we didn't bleed it for air. So it had an air bubble in it as all of the bubbles were coming out of the coolant. So there was a nice thing, a bubble at the top. Normally what I try to do is heat up the system, pull the top off, and then let it breathe, and then put the top back on and then cool down. And then at that point, it should be under negative pressure, so to speak. But since we moved it, we didn't get a chance to top it off, so we didn't get to go through that process. And on top of that, the fans that we were using were ring fans from Thermaltake.
Very pretty.
They hook into an RGB controller to control the lights and also to control the fan speed. And that is based off of software that's being run on the PC.
Not temperature.
And if you don't have the software running, the fans go into low power mode and don't actually ever spin up.
And how did that happen?
Well, when you were at the LAN party, the software had failed at some point and they never spun up. So we had the loop just getting hotter and hotter and hotter and hotter until it got to the point where it fell apart.
So all that's a pretty scary story of a lot of things we could have done better. And the reason we didn't really, to be fair, was because we built the machine like we frequently do, just a couple of days before the LAN.
Exactly.
And rushed it over there without having spent a lot of time getting it really up to speed. But since then, it's performed well. But yeah. I also want to point out that as catastrophic as that failure was, liquid spraying everywhere, the net loss in the machine was one 850-watt power supply that we only lost because it was directly below the leak.
It filled up and went boom. It was actually pretty cool to watch, although Darren was very, very concerned.
I was.
Because it could have actually killed a whole lot more.
As you would expect from liquid flying everywhere, I was really afraid we'd killed nearly everything. Mm-hmm. And so we spent a great deal of time cleaning and rebuilding that system and resealing it, and it has performed well ever since.
Yeah. Well, we learned from our mistakes. I fixed the fans. I added smaller O-rings to the compression ring of that fitting so that it would have a larger clamping force. And then once we reduced the temperature of the loop, it stopped bending the PETG tubing and actually putting dimples in it.
Yeah, and we're actively monitoring the temperature now in the loop, which is just a general best practice.
Yeah, so in terms of water cooling safety, we just talked about one catastrophic failure. A lot of the people at Hackfort were talking about all-in-one coolers failing.
Oh, yeah, which is true, and it's a little harder sometimes to detect.
It is, and the one thing that can fail, well, there's two things that can basically fail in one of those. The pump cannot work, which would be a pump failure, or you not plugging the header into the right header port on your motherboard.
Same fan issue.
You could break a hose. And by breaking a hose, it means that you are not treating it with respect that it deserves. Yes, you should be able to bend it all over the place, but it's not necessarily designed to be run through the dirt and across the street and
occasionally you do have to clean out your PC. People sometimes forget that.
Yeah. You also have to make sure the radiator is clean. And if it's not, then it doesn't matter if it's running at all, because it's not going to transfer any of that heat to the surrounding air. These days, all-in-one coolers they're supported by Intel. You could get an all-in-one cooler with some certain high-end processors from them, factory. And they're going to be warranting those for, what is it, like 6 years? That seems like a pretty good recommend. These days, there's three manufacturers that make all-in-ones. We got Cooler Master, Asetek, and Coolit, I believe. But I think that got absorbed by the Corsair folks. You know, and there was always early editions of those that had failures, and the pump would just stop working. You hit it a couple times, it would start up again. It might work for a week. It might work for the rest of its life. But it's just a matter of, you have to pay attention.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's definitely an open barrier of entry, but just like all other hardware, it has a set life cycle. It's not going to run for 10, 15, 20 years without maintenance. And that should just be the given on just about all of your hardware.
Yeah. So let's end this little segment on a high note.
Yes, I think we should. All of that aside. How did we do?
Well, I did set the 3DMark 06 record for a GTX 1050 Ti.
Woohoo!
And I posted this in the article, which is linked in the show notes. I basically got 298 marks.
That's a lot. And which that's
1,000 over the previous entry, which was good. So now he's down in second place.
We'll see if he comes back for another run. Give us a little competition there. So for the folks out there, what does that mean when you take a cup?
Oh, that is basically the highest score recorded at hardware bought for that particular hardware configuration. And since this is a 3D benchmark, it's all based off of the video card.
And that record is global.
Well, global. Within the hardware bot region. I mean, this is within hardware bot itself. I got a gold cup. I could have submitted this to the orb at FutureMark and probably would have also gotten the gold cup. But for hardware bot, all you have to do is just take a screenshot of stuff, save your settings, and submit it.
So that's pretty good. Did you get any other records or notable scores on any of the other suites? Are you still working on them?
I got, let's see, what was it? Like three other. Not necessarily records, but I got like a second place, I believe, with a 1050 Ti on another benchmark. I can link those in the show notes as well. But I got to the point where you remember I told you that the card got really frosty when it got really cold?
Yes.
Well, it stopped outputting video.
Oh, no.
It's not broken because I put the air cooler on it and it works just fine. But I switched over to doing 780 Ti classifieds in SLI, which got me three more cups, which was pretty awesome.
Very cool. So all in all, 2 weeks of some pretty heavy overclocking, a lot of fun, a lot of gaming, and a lot of opportunity to mix with the folks out there. I think we had a great time. Very successful.
Yes. I would definitely looking forward to doing something similar next year.
So watch for more videos, more articles, and if you have the opportunity, we'd love to see you at the next Boise LAN or at next year's Hackfort. Come check us out.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwaresound.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Sound by subscribing to our RSS. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook. This has been a Ninja Lane production, copyright 2019. Thanks for listening.